Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. The time is 1:33. I'm Senator Costello. I'd like to welcome Senator Stevens. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Welcome Senator Ray Jackson.
Good afternoon.
Senator Rivak has been pulled away in another responsibility, and I think Senator Machicki will be here as soon as he can. So today we have a few items on the agenda. We've got Senate Bill 238 regarding money transmission, and then Senate Bill 175 regarding health care services by telehealth. But we are going to start off this afternoon's meeting with a board appointee, Matthew Barth, who's an appointee to the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. Matthew, I see that you're online. We'll just have you introduce yourself to the committee and explain your interest in serving on the board, and then we'll take committee questions and then open it for public testimony. So welcome, Matthew, and I do want to mention the Senate President has joined us. Welcome, Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So, Matthew, if you could join us online and introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Matthew Barth, and I'm here for the Workers' Compensation Board statewide labor seat. I apologize in advance. I'm a little under the weather, so my voice doesn't sound quite like I usually do. Thank you all for having me, and thank you all for what you do. I know it's a huge sacrifice, giving up other career opportunities and being away from y'all's family for extended amounts of time to just really help improve communities across our state, so thank you. I've been a police officer in public service here in Anchorage for about 15 years, and I'm excited to apply my skills and abilities as a member of the Workers' Compensation Board, and I've already been begun work as a board member and have greatly enjoyed just the collaboration of working with others and solving problems to come to fair and equal outcomes. And I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know y'all are super busy, so I'd just like to turn it over to you, Madam Chair, for any questions you might have of me.
Okay, well, thank you, Matthew. And I see you were appointed January 24th. Is that correct?
I don't have the exact date with me, ma'am, but that sounds approximately correct.
Okay. And do you feel qualified at this point to just share with the committee what you see some of the major challenges are for the board, or what you'd like to accomplish as a member of the board?
Sure. I think some of the challenges really are trying to focus on what is reasonable and what the law allows us and guides us to do. It can be hard at times not to get emotionally attached or involved, viewing someone's problems. Most employees that have to utilize workman's comp have gone through something tragic. So I think that's something I bring to the table I'd like to help accomplish, and just focus on what the law says and allow that to guide us. And I think my 15 or so years in the past, my current career, allows me to kind of step back and look at things based on the evidence and impartially, and then just working through those conversations and the rulings with the other board members.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Do members of the committee have any questions for him? None? Okay, Matthew. Well, listen, I want to personally thank you, and also on behalf of the committee, for your willingness to serve. This is a very important board that you're being appointed to, and we all really appreciate that qualified Alaskans are willing to take time out of your life to serve in this important capacity. And with that, I want to thank you for calling into the committee today. We will be moving all of the appointees at a future date, so I won't be actually making that motion today, but we will be forwarding your name. So with that, I want to thank you. And then I will briefly open public testimony for the appointment of Matthew Barth to the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. Is there anyone here in Juneau or online wishing to testify? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed. Matthew, thank you once again for calling in, and appreciate your volunteering.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You all have a great day.
You too. So next we have Senate Bill 238. We'll take a brief at ease while folks get ready for the bill. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and I didn't thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and LIO operator, Doug, that like I usually do. So thank you so much for being here to make this meeting official. Next, we have Senate Bill 238. This is regarding money transmission and virtual currency. It's the first hearing in the committee. We'll have an introduction, invited testimony, and then we have several folks online for questions, and then we'll open public testimony. So with that, I'd like to welcome Robert Schmidt, the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities. If you'd like to introduce yourself and walk us through the PowerPoint, please.
Yes, my name is Robert Schmidt. I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities. My Chief of Examinations is online for the sectional analysis, if that's supposed to come first, or I can go into the PowerPoint.
You know, I think we'd have you walk us through the PowerPoint first, just to get a lay of the land.
Very good.
Before we get into the weeds.
I would also encourage members of the committee to stop me with questions. There's a lot going on in this bill. This is very new age stuff. So please, if a question occurs to you, please feel free to stop me. So the Division of Banking and Securities, go forward one slide, please.
Do you want to sit there with him?
So the Division of Banking and Securities serves as the primary regulator for over 150 money transmitters in Alaska. These money transmitters follow the Alaska Uniform Money Services Act, that's found at AS 0655, which was passed by the legislature in 2007 and implemented in 2008. The bill being discussed today is the Alaska Uniform Money Transmission Modernization Act. This legislation amends and modernizes the Alaska Uniform Money Services Act. The Act provides the legal framework for money transmission functions, including currency exchange, transfer or wiring of money, and loading and reloading of payment instruments, including stored value cards. When passed in 2007, the current Act did not contemplate virtual or cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or the rate of money service business expansion and innovations. This legislation updates the licensing, record keeping, and enforcement provisions to support these business activities and protect Alaska consumers. This bill adopts pertinent sections of the Uniform Money Transmission Modernization Act, the model law, which was developed by state regulators, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, of which my division is a member, with input and participation from industry stakeholders. When the current act went into effect in 2008, money transmission was sending a wire transfer at your local grocery store, or purchasing a money order, or traveler's checks at the bank. This bill will modernize Alaska's money transmission laws to include cryptocurrency, also known as virtual currency, such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Dogecoin. Alaska does not currently regulate virtual currency. Cryptocurrency is one of the top tools of rogue actors such as Russian oligarchs or North Korean kleptocrats to evade sanctions. 28 states currently regulate cryptocurrency. Next slide, please.
So, Mr. Yes, Schmidt, do you mind if we just take a step back at this point? And we had talked about this before the committee started. Could you just share with us, and explain for the public too, listening, and those that will be looking at this later, what is cryptocurrency?
Okay. I think we're going to start at the very beginning because that's a very good place to start. And the best slide that I have for that to start, money transmission historically, imagine it's 1880s and you're in Boston and you have a cousin in San Francisco and you want to send the princely sum of $20 from Boston to your cousin in San Francisco. So you go to the Western Union office, you hand them the $20 and ensure that they will transmit that money to your cousin in San Francisco. the need for regulation arose from the fact that you were giving money, potentially a lot of money, and trusting them that it would get to where it was supposed to go. That's what money transmission, the origins of money transmission are. I'm going to do some explaining on what cryptocurrency is, and your response to me, your response to what I'm going to tell you might be, you're joking. That's monopoly money. This isn't real. What I would like to do, first of all, if we could skip to slide 4, please. Slide 4 is how many money transmission licenses have been issued by the state of Alaska. So in 2017, the top line, we've got about 90 money transmission licenses. Now in calendar year 2021, we had 153 money transmission licenses. Now imagine there's three kinds of money transmitters. The first kind is we only transmit real money, which is we call fiat currency. So if you only handle real money, there are businesses that only handle cryptocurrency. And then the middle bucket is we do both. If you are in the virtual currency only bucket, the Division of Banking and Securities does not regulate you whatsoever. If they come to us for a license, we send them on their way. If you do real money transmission, we will give you a money transmission license on approval of your application and payment of a fee. If you're in the middle bucket where you do both, we will give you a license to transmit money, but we will not license you to transmit virtual currency because we don't do that, and we will not let you tell your customers that you're licensed by us for that function. Skipping ahead to slide 5, this is the volume of reported money transmission in Alaska. So in 2019, the reported volume of money transmission in Alaska was $1.68 billion. It then nearly doubled, went up 80% or so from 2019 to 2021 to $2.8 billion. And then it exploded, where the reported volume of money transmission in Alaska went from $2.8 billion up 2,500% to $7.1 billion of money transmitted in Alaska that is reported to us. That is an arresting increase in volume, but the real nub of this is slide 6, which is virtual currency transmission in Alaska reported to us. In 2019, $33.6 million in reported virtual currency transmission in Alaska, $91 million, so it about triples year over year, and then it explodes from $91 million to $2.3 billion virtual currency transmitted in Alaska that is reported to us. I continually say that is reported to us because remember the three buckets. You do only real money, you do both, you only do virtual money. If you're only doing virtual currency, you don't report to us. This number is a floor, and we believe this number to actually be significantly higher. If we could go to slide 11, that talks about what is virtual currency. So virtual currency is a money-like asset that is managed, stored, or exchanged on a computer system, and it's transmitted on the internet. Virtual currency is issued and controlled by its developers and used and accepted electronically among the members of a specific virtual community. It is accepted by natural or legal persons as a means of payment and can be stored, transferred, or traded electronically. A lot of what gives money value, though we don't often think of it, is the fact that it is backed by a government. So a dollar is backed by the United States government, and that gives it sort of an intrinsic value. But imagine you're a kid in elementary school and you've got pieces of gum that you might trade, and that piece of gum has some kind of value in the eyes of whoever you're giving it to. Or an even better example would be a work of art that has no intrinsic value yet can be priceless or worth many millions of dollars simply because people say that it has value. How virtual currency started, particularly how Bitcoin started. A computer was used to solve a problem that created the first Bitcoin. that problem became exponentially more difficult to solve to create the next Bitcoin. So if you hear about people mining Bitcoin, they are having their computers perform enormously difficult computational tasks that have no purpose other than to generate Bitcoin. So that's what Bitcoin mining is. And if you hear about Bitcoin mining using lots of electricity, it's because people have racks and racks of servers, these computers spinning at billions or trillions of operations a second to perform this task that has no point, but it generates Bitcoin. And if you're sitting yourself thinking, this is silly, well, for one, you might be right, but I would send you back to the slide that says we've got $2.3 billion of this reported in Alaska that is currently not regulated. So again, if you're left with the impression that Bitcoin is not a thing, why is anybody interested in this? You're not alone in that impression, but it has absolutely taken it off, and it has significant traction in Alaska.
Senator Machicki.
All right.
Well, we skipped a couple slides. Did you want to?
Yes, return? I will. I will go back and sort of pick up where I left off. But again, I would encourage the committee, if you have questions, there's a lot going on here. And I should also say, if there's one thing that you come away from this committee remembering about this bill, it's the bill to try and keep virtual Alaska from being used as a conduit for virtual currency into Russia, North Korea, Iran, Somalia, etc. So if I could go back to the third slide, please. When passed in 2007, the current act did not contemplate virtual or cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin or the rates of money service business expansion. This legislation updates the licensing, record keeping, and enforcement provisions to support these business activities and protect Alaska consumers. Key and important. In the past, the division has found licensed money transmitters of real money that have poor compliance with the Bank Secrecy Act and Office of Foreign Assets Control that identifies suspicious activities and prohibits doing business with individuals and companies that have been found to conduct money laundering or have sanctions against them for affiliations to well-known rogue countries. That is to say, we have found money transmitters sending money to countries that I have previously named in this presentation. If companies do not have a compliance management system in place, Alaskans could be scammed and the funds they send may not be received by their family members. Alaska participates on a multi-state money transmitter examinations team using a risk-based approach to streamline state supervision to be more effective and efficient in utilizing our state resources. An examination is a review of a company's compliance with applicable state and federal laws and regulations and areas deemed likely to affect the safety and soundness of the licensee. The Division of Banking and Security staff reviews the financial condition, business model, internal controls and auditing, management, systems and technology, and compliance management systems of a licensee. Utilizing network supervision with other states, which this bill would allow, will let us reduce the regulatory burden on companies by conducting less frequent examinations and reducing the time, travel, and expense for the licensee and the department. Examinations ensure that policies and procedures are being followed and consumers are being protected. Fourth slide, please. So money transmission in Alaska keeps growing. As of December 31st, 2021, we had 153 money transmitter licensees, with 40 of those conducting virtual currency business activity that is not currently regulated. Over the last 5 years, money transmission licenses have increased 68%. Today, online transactions conducted on the internet and virtual currency such as Bitcoin are now common means of exchanging and or transferring payment or value. The proposed legislation is necessary to appropriately supervise and regulate money transmitters to protect Alaska consumers. Moving on to slide 5. We've looked at this briefly. This chart shows the impressive growth of total money transmission volume in Alaska, reported money transmission volume in Alaska, from $1.6 billion in 2019 to over $7 billion in 2021. That's a 6,250% increase in 3 years. These totals include money transmission, payment instruments, stored value, and virtual currency. Again, these numbers do not represent the third bucket of we only do virtual currency. These numbers are all low. Moving on to slide 6, which is, in my opinion, by far the most important slide in this presentation. The graph shows the explosive growth of reported annual virtual currency transmission in Alaska. This volume is reported by companies that are licensed to conduct money transmission in Alaska and also have virtual currency transmission. So first bucket, second bucket, not the third bucket. 6,782% growth from 2019 to 2021. I wish my retirement account had done the same. Please note that reported virtual currency transmission in Alaska grew 2,420% in 2021 alone. Virtual currency transactions have fundamentally changed the financial services world and are growing exponentially in Alaska. This bill will add virtual currency activities to the definition of money transmission to allow the Division of Banking and Securities to regulate this activity that accounted for nearly one-third of the total money transmission volume in Alaska in 2021. I have drilled down a little bit deeper into this data, and as I do so, I become more concerned. I see companies that from 1 year to the next have gone from tens of millions of dollars of virtual currency transmission in Alaska to one company transmitting over $1 billion of virtual currency in Alaska, or companies going from a few thousand dollars of virtual currency transmission in Alaska to many millions of dollars of virtual currency transmission in Alaska all in 1 year. It is my concern. We have no ability to look to examine their books and records, but it is my concern that Alaska, by virtue of our lack of regulation, is already being targeted for sort of being a wild, blessed place to go with your virtual currency transmission. And it is my fear that we might be being used to evade sanctions.
Well, Mr. Schmidt?
Yes, please.
So what does it mean to be regulated? So if this bill were to pass, you would have to promulgate regulations, I'm assuming, but then what would you be able to do that you can't do right now? And you just alluded to one of the things, which is to look at the books and I guess I'm even asking how would you even reach out to the individuals who have to become licensed, and do they have to stop what they're doing, while they're waiting to get licensed?
There would be transition provisions, and we wouldn't anticipate any business interruption. Let's talk about what happens now with real money, because that's very similar. It's basically what would start happening with virtual currency. If you are coming to us to transmit real money, you have to submit an application. You have to tell us who you are. You have to have you have to demonstrate that you pass certain financial liquidity. Remember my example about you giving your princely sum of $20 to Western Union 150 odd years ago. We look at what your company's, your business's liquidity provisions are. We perform background checks on the people who are the primary actors. And then on a schedule, we perform examinations of the books and records of a money transmitter. And that money transmitter, those examinations that we do, we might be part of a team of, say, 20 states that examine, for example, PayPal. And Alaska, you're going to do this slice of the examination, and other states are going to handle other parts of the examination. Or if it's a very small money transmitter, a local mom and pop shop, we would go in and perform the examination of their books and records to examine their internal controls and that sort of thing. I will tell you that in recent years, it was such an examination of a small business where we discovered that there was slim to none compliance with Bank Secrecy Act provisions, and this particular money transmitter specialized in sending money to what could only be characterized as customers in a rogue nation.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the education here. I guess my question is, how do you know, if someone is in business and not telling you about it, what are the penalties for somebody not reporting to you?
I would actually, the specifics on what you are required.
In general.
Correct. If I could defer for the specifics to my chief of examinations, Tracy Reno, who I believe is on the line.
I actually don't see her name. Let's see. I don't see her listed. Oh, I do. Okay. Yeah, Tracy, if you could introduce yourself to the committee.
Sure. My name is Tracy Reno, and I'm the chief of examinations for the State of Alaska Division of Banking and Securities. We have provisions in place for penalties and public consent orders and civil penalties when we find an applicant that comes in and they've been doing activity prior to licensure. We're able to go back and request those records, look at all of the transactions that were conducted during that period of time, and then determine, did they cooperate with us to find out that information? Did they withhold that information and not cooperate? So we can determine what the civil penalty and should read as far as the monetary fee that they should pay to the state for that unlicensed activity.
Thank you, Tracy. So you mentioned if an applicant comes in, what if they don't come in? I mean, how do you know who's doing business out there that are not reporting to you?
We use the nationwide multi-state licensing system, or NMLS system, and that takes care of the licenses across the United States. So if they're doing business somewhere else, they would be in NMLS and we would be able to see that record. Sometimes we'll get a complaint. Somebody will file something that says, hey, you know, I'm having an issue with this company, and we'll become aware of it then. We can go out and look at all the companies that are licensed in other states to see who's out there that may not be licensed in Alaska, and we could, you know, conduct an investigation of those companies to determine that. We also have investigators that can just basically go out on the internet and start doing a search, a Google search, and just start trying to figure out who's out there doing that activity and try and determine it that way.
Thank you, Tracy. So how many folks do you have in your side of the business to make sure that people are reporting what they should be reporting?
For examinations on the money transmission side, we have one full-time examiner and one part-time examiner. And then investigations on the enforcement side, we have two investigator slots at this moment.
Thank you. Senator Machicki, any questions?
Well, no, she magically gave me the gavel, so I'm supposed to ask you.
Oh, you've got it.
Okay. Yes. I do have a question for Mr. Schmidt, though. How do you regulate something that seems to have no intrinsic value other than a supply and demand basis?
There is an effort to make virtual currencies that are tied to real currencies to make their value more stable so that they behave more like a currency and less like an investment. But in essence, your question is, how do we regulate something that has no value other than supply and demand? And the answer is this bill, by making sure that people who are in the business of sending and receiving it are following the rules, are checking against Office of Foreign Asset Control lists to make sure that inappropriate people are not sending or receiving it, and that they are not using Alaska as a conduit for it.
So I have a follow-up to that. Yes. So we saw fluctuations of a few hundred dollars to $68,000 for Bitcoin value, now down in the, $41,000 per Bitcoin share price. Where does the – is it pure speculation? I'm kind of wondering how you even wrap this into the same category as actual currency, that's why I asked the question about regulation. So you're simply wanting to trace that transactions are legal and not attributed to laundering or rogue nations. You're not in any way delving into how in the bloody hell value is derived from.
If I could do that, I would be living in the south of France right now if I could make those sorts of determinations. it is our desire in regulation is not to impact the value of any particular cryptocurrency. It's to make sure that cryptocurrency is now being used like money, and we are trying to make sure that it's not being used in any form of money laundering or being used to funnel money inappropriately to places where it ought not be.
Okay.
And if I could ask Ms. Reno if she has any further and better answer to your question.
Ms. Reno?
Thank you. I would just add that, you know, like you said, we're not looking at the value or you know, the activity, the business that somebody decides to create the virtual currency. What we want to know is how are those transactions conducted, who the money's being sent to, who the money's coming from, are they on sanctions lists, are they tracking the records, do they keep them for the appropriate amount of time, are they reporting suspicious activities. So there's records that are kept when this money transaction is taking place, whether it's virtual currency or whether it's fiat currency. We're just going in to make sure that their policies and procedures are followed, that what they say is actually what they're doing, and that we can track and trace all of those transactions appropriately.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I guess my question, when you look at a market cap of $750 billion in a relatively short time, and some of my younger investor friends that may have done very well in Bitcoin, is there a chance that cryptocurrency, a large proportion of the value, is associated with international laundering? The value itself is associated with a place to launder funds. I can't. I mean, I've been investing for a long time. I'm scratching my head on $750 billion in value showing up in a relatively short time.
If I may, Senator Machicki, I would say that the anonymity or the perception of anonymity that goes with virtual currency is a significant part of its value. Whether that is a normal interest in privacy or a nefarious interest in privacy.
Interesting. Okay.
Senator Stevens.
So I don't know from Bitcoin, but I do have an understanding of the art market, and you said that there was a connection there, some connection. But it seems like it's a little odd because, you know, in the art market, you know the provenance of the paintings where the Senator Machicki has a beautiful Sidney Lawrence in his office. If it's ever missing, he'll know who's got it. So I'm sure you'll be to see me. But they're not quite the same thing, are they? I mean, with art, you know what the value is. It's been traded over the years. There's the history of it. I'm not sure that's a good comparison.
There is a equivalent of provenance in cryptocurrency. There are registries of Bitcoin or other forms of virtual currency that keep track of where that Bitcoin has gone. And you can look at a particular fraction of a Bitcoin, and you can trace from the time it was mined through every owner it has ever been through. So each Bitcoin or fraction of a Bitcoin has a trail that goes back to when it was mined.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt. And something I was curious about, and when I had stepped out, you were talking about the national database that you check the, like, you double check the licensing with. Can you talk about that?
Sure. NMLS stands for Nationwide Multi-State Licensing Service or System. The NMLS system came to be following the housing crisis of the late 2000s, and NMLS originally stood for Nationwide Mortgage Licensing System. And if you ever see an ad for a mortgage loan originator, somebody that wants to sell you a mortgage, there should be a little line on the bottom that says NMLS number. That's what that NMLS is coming from. Since that time, the NMLS system has grown from just mortgage licensing to all sorts of financial licensing. I was recently, before I came here, I was at the state office building with one of my licensing staff. he brought out a great big three-ring binder and said, you know, it used to be that an application came to me in one of these three-ring binders all tabulated, and I had to pull it out, and I had to scan it, and I had to do all these things. Now it's a single nationwide platform that is harmonized and uniform throughout every state that uses the NMLS system. I would also make the large picture observation that I've lived in Alaska for over 30 years, and we are constantly wanting to see how business or how government can be business friendly. And in my time in public service, I'm learning that one of the best things we can do to be business friendly is to be harmonious, so that you don't have imagine a pegboard with all these different shapes, and a business has to, okay, does Alaska take the star shape or does it take the circular shape, etc. When we harmonize things and make our systems more compatible with other states, that makes it much easier for industry. With that, Tracy, Ms. Reno knows far more about NMLS than I do. So if you, Tracy, you would like to add anything on to my answer.
Sure. This is Tracy Reno. I would add that we do multiple things within the NMLS. We have the licensing application process. They can pay fees. We have the ability to run background checks through the FBI. We don't currently have that permission with our current act, but that would be one of the things in this bill, is to modernize and streamline that, so that we're not having a person run individual background checks, you know, taking up hours and hours of each week, but it can be done through the system automatically, and it's right there for us. So we have the background checks. We look at to see who's running the companies, who owns the companies. All of the information that is part of that company record is in that system, along with any enforcement actions. Consumers can search that database to see who's licensed, who has issues with enforcement with other states. And then we'd also like to, you know, as we go along, bring in the other industries that we touch in the division, so that they're all streamlined also. So everybody's the same. We're able to streamline the licensing process using the NMLS to follow the other states and make it easier and reduce the regulatory burden for companies.
Thank you, Tracy. The reason I'm asking is just because we deal with all kinds of professions through this committee. So is that system something that the department can use to do background checks for military spouses, for example, who want to transfer their licenses, that type of thing?
I don't know that there's interoperability. For example, if somebody had a military spouse that was a nurse or other profession outside of the financial industry, I don't know if that would have any interoperability. Might it have interoperability if they are within the financial services system? Possibly.
Thank you. So appreciate you going down that rabbit trail for a moment.
That's okay. All right. If I could go to slide 7, please. This bill does have a fiscal note, and I'd like to talk for a moment about the Division of Banking and Securities revenue picture. In short, our revenue is growing and accelerating. Receipts have grown 53% from fiscal year 2012 to fiscal year 2021. Receipts in fiscal year 2021 were $19.6 million. Our receipts in calendar year 2021 were $21.5 million. The division has a budget of $4 million. Our budget in 2012 was $3.5 million. So the growth in our revenues has far exceeded the growth in our budget. The division will require additional staff and support costs to respond to growth in the money services activities, the complexity of new business models, and use of third-party partnerships. These positions will allow the division to implement the new law, incorporate changes in the operation of the NMLS, develop proficiency in the examination of electronic systems, and assessment of cybersecurity measures in a high-risk environment. New program receipt revenue is estimated at the low end to be a minimum of $110,000 for 35 new license applications by fiscal year 2025. It is difficult to anticipate the number of new applications and annual renewal fees and assessments and resulting revenue for future years. However, the division expects to adopt an assessment fee model through new regulations that would ensure actual costs of supervision of the industry would be covered through annual program receipts that are expected to range between $750,000 to $1.2 million. Slide 8, please. We've talked an awful lot about virtual currency. That's a key part of this law, and it's certainly a key part of what people are looking at given current world events. But there are other parts to this law. Why do we need to change the act? The current law has not kept up with the industry's explosive growth and innovation. Current consumer protection is insufficient. Cryptocurrency is one of the top risks for consumer fraud. Virtual currency is not included in the definition of money transmission. Moving on to slide 9. This bill will reduce the regulatory burden by streamlining initial licensing and license renewal using the NMLS system for submitting license applications, filing documents, reporting, and the payment of fees. The bill removes the currency exchange license type and adds currency exchange to the definition of money transmission, so only one license is needed. I would like to emphasize that this bill was drafted with the input from the money transmission industry, and we expect that this committee will be receiving letters of support, and we have been speaking with very prominent money transmission businesses, nationwide businesses whose names you would recognize, that are supportive at least of the model law and are now taking a look at the Alaska bill. This bill will protect Alaska consumers by conducting criminal background checks through the NMLS on individuals who control a money transmission business. We currently do background checks through by division staff who use a third-party software called Clear. We estimate that this takes 140 staff hours a year to just do money transmission criminal background checks. This bill will ensure regulatory costs of supervision keep pace with growth by allowing implementation of a volume-based annual assessment. Licensees will be required to report money transmission volume, which will ensure licensees are treated fairly and equitably based on the level of volume and business conducted in the state. The disparity, the small local money transmitters by comparison to the great big ones who are closing in on $1 billion of money transmission a year, we're envisioning seeing them paying very different fee models based on the volume of business that they're doing in the state. And then this bill will broaden the definition of money transmission to include virtual currency transactions and other methods of moving or transferring monetary value to better protect Alaskans. And again, as of March 2022, 28 states regulate virtual currency. In sum, this bill will provide better protection for Alaskans. It will require licensees to comply with federal laws, including suspicious activity reporting, increase the record retention schedule to 5 years for greater transparency, allow criminal background checks to be run on licensees, update enforcement provisions by allowing a broader spectrum of orders to be issued, ensure the division can coordinate with other states in all areas of regulation, licensing, and supervision to reduce regulatory burden on the industry and more effectively utilize regulator resources. I really can't emphasize this enough. Tracy and her team rely heavily on coordinating with other states. She's got 1.5 people, I believe she said, that handle money transmission. We work with other states in order to synergize our resources to make sure that the consumers are protected. Slide 11, we've talked about quite a bit what virtual currency is. It's money, it's a representation of value held on a computer system that has no physical, tangible existence. It is mined or created by a computer, but it is there are recent efforts to tie virtual currencies to real currencies to make them more stable, but it remains that virtual currency largely has value, much like the Mona Lisa, because people say it has value. And that's the conclusion of my presentation. I would welcome any further questions you might have. That was an awful lot.
Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a governor's bill. I assume it comes from your agency, the things that you needed to be done.
Yes.
We've got 4 weeks left to go before the session is over. Get attention because it's the governor's bill, and I guess my question basically is how important is it that we deal with this year? It has to go through two committees on the Senate side, I assume somewhere on the House side. I don't know if there's a companion bill on the House side. How important is it that it gets done this session?
I can speak to how important it is in my world and in the Division of Banking and Securities world. I was appointed director of the Division of Banking and Securities in December of 2021, so I've only been on the job for about 6 months. My staff has made it very clear that this bill has been, and modernizing money transmission has been, a priority to them. But when we started getting the 2021 numbers on virtual currency, everybody was absolutely aghast. We could not believe the numbers that we were seeing, and we were seeing incomplete year data that far exceeded anyone's expectations. With current world events, I believe that has absolutely put a highlighter on this need. I am concerned that by our not regulating virtual currency, coupled with Alaska's traditional connections with Russia, that we might attract a problem to us. I appreciate that the legislature has a great many pressing issues before it and not a whole lot of time to address those issues, but I would say that this is absolutely our number one priority. I would also say that we will, depending on how this bill fares, we will be looking at regulating virtual currency by virtue of agency rulemaking. We would prefer to do it through legislation. We would prefer to do it in this well-thought-out framework that has been developed by experts, that has been developed in concert with the industry. So this is critically important within my world, and I've told other people, it is my nightmare scenario to wake up to an FBI raid on a local Alaska money transmitter that is utilizing Alaska's lax regulatory scheme to do inappropriate things with virtual currency.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your answer. I understand the urgency of it. I understand the need to protect Alaskans. And again, it's a big lift, but it can be done, I hope.
Mr. Schmidt, is there a House companion for this bill?
There is a currently identical House Bill 408, and I will be testifying in support of it on Friday morning.
What committee is that in?
Labor and Commerce as well.
Are you aware of any opposition to the bill?
I was surprised to learn that there is some opposition from within the payroll processing industry. Payroll processors, there's lots of nuance to these different business models, and my licensing staff spends a lot of time looking at what it is people actually do. So I'm going to speak sort of in broad brush pictures here. Please realize that there's lots of exceptions and nuance to this. But in general, payroll processors are currently covered under our existing act. It is unclear to me why payroll processors, a nationwide payroll processor organization, has filed a letter in opposition to this bill when payroll processors currently are subject to our law, depending on their exact business model. And I would also note that payroll processors, depending on the exact nature of their business law, are in a similar position to the example I've used many times of Western Union. They've got control of your money. You were giving them money. They are perhaps they're giving the money to your employees on your behalf. They might be paying federal taxes on your behalf. They might be making other payments for health insurance or what have you. So there is a significant amount of trust that these payroll processors are handling your funds. I can tell you again that we have spoken with very large money transmitters, nationwide, multinational, big folks. They are supportive of this bill. We expect to see letters of support from them in due time.
Any further questions?
Just a quick one.
Senator Stevens.
So are other states doing this already? Where are we in the mesh with them?
I would like to share a comment made by one of my senior-most bank examiners that works for Ms. Reno. I would love it if Alaska were close to the beginning of adopting this rather than being the last one to adopt this. This model bill was approved by the Conference of State Bank Supervisors last fall. It has been, I understand that it's been passed by West Virginia. It is pending before a number of states across the political spectrum.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt. Really appreciate your attention to this matter. And I know you came to my office and we talked about this bill, and I hope you have an opportunity to talk to the other members of the committee if you haven't already.
I should mention I'm here through Friday, and I have nothing going on tomorrow that would be anything I've got going on I can put aside to speak to legislators about this bill.
Great. Thank you very much. And Tracy, I do know that you are here also to walk us through the sectional, and I was hoping that, you know, it's very lengthy, if you could perhaps give a brief review of the sectional and then perhaps highlight any sections that are of critical importance.
Thank you. Through the chair, I would like to go ahead and, for the record, my name is Tracy Reno, Chief of Examinations with the Division of Banking and Securities. I would like to read the sectional analysis for SB 238, and I will try to do my best to make it brief for you. Section 1, page 1, line 12, adds a section of uncodified law expressing the purpose of the bill, which amends Title 6, Chapter 55 of the Alaska Money Service Uniform Act. Section 2, page 2, line 8, amends AS 0655101A, which contains the requirement that a person may not engage in the business of money transmission without a license. Section 3, page 2, line 18, repeals and reenacts AS 0655102 to conform with the Conference State Bank Supervisors CSBS Uniform Money Transmission Modernization Act, or the Model Law. This section provides the application requirements for a money transmission license and allows the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, the Department, to change or update the form to maintain consistency with the nationwide multi-state licensing system and registry, or the NMLS and registry, their licensing standards and practices. Section 4, page 3, line 5, repeals and reacts AS 0655105 to conform with the Model Law. This section contains the Department's license issuance procedures, timelines, license terms, due process procedures, and it provides that if an applicant is subject to multi-state licensing process, the Department may accept the investigation results of the lead investigation state. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and skip down to Section 6, page 5, line 7. It amends ASO 655 to add new sections, and those sections contain maintenance and money transmission licenses. It provides that they have to continue to meet qualifications to apply. 109 concerns information requirements for certain individuals, calling them key individuals or those control people of businesses. It also contains background report requirements applicable to individuals who have resided outside of the United States for the last 10 years. 110 also concerns consistent state licensing. It grants the department discretion to implement those licensing provisions and protocols in a manner that is consistent with other states that have adopted a multi-state licensing product, and it is process, excuse me, and it establishes relationships or contracts that enables the department to collect and maintain records, coordinate licensing process fees, and communicate with licensees, and then utilize the NMLS for all aspects of licensing. Section 7, page 7, line 18, amends AS 0655 to add new sections to Article 2 concerning virtual currency. It will talk about exempted activities. It also is applicable to persons whose virtual currency business activities on an annual basis are expected to be measured at $5,000 or less. So they will have an exemption for a de minimis activity measured by the dollar equivalent of that virtual currency. 206 sets precedent to engage in, conditions for engaging in virtual currency business activity. It says basically that it's money transmission, and therefore, unless a virtual currency business is exempt, then it would require a license. There's also required disclosures, and also talks about the property interests and entitlements for virtual currency, talking about the control of the business and the requirement to maintain an amount of each type of virtual currency to satisfy aggregate entitlements for each type of virtual currency. So basically making sure that there's security in place to protect consumers' funds that are being used for virtual currency transmission. And then I think one of the biggest things is AS 0655208, which is in Section 7, modeled off of the Uniform Regulation of Virtual Currency Business Act. It basically is using the Uniform Law Commission's language, this VRBCA, and it's a well thought out way to include the virtual currency and money transmission to incorporate it into our new bill. And we want to make sure that it's well thought out, that we think about all of the things that those companies do. It's intended to protect the owner of the virtual currency that's entrusted to a licensee. The model law does not create a private right of action, and instead all enforcement of virtual currency violations will be by the department. It further describes this section, and this is in quotes, takes the virtual currency under the control of the licensee off the balance sheet of the virtual currency business and beyond the business's right to deal with its as their own property. This formulation reduces the need for greater net worth without sacrificing user protection. So we've got consumer protection issues along with reducing that regulatory burden on companies. Section 8, page 15, line 9, repeals and reacts 0655301, which is the relationship between the licensee and the authorized delegate to conform with the model law. Section 9, page 17, line 1, amends AS0655302 concerning authorized activities to add a joint and several liability provision applicable to persons who engage in money transmission on behalf of an unlicensed person. Section 10, page 17, line 11, talks about supervision, and that's going back to that examination investigation of those licensees or their authorized delegates. It allows the department to accept examination reports of other states, the federal government, or an independent accounting firm. It requires licensees to pay all costs associated with examinations and references the confidentiality requirements. It eliminates the existing requirement that a notice be sent to a licensee 45 days prior to an annual examination. Let's see. I'm going to go ahead and skip to Section 17 and 18, which start on page 23, line 28. It amends subsections A and D for consisting with model law concerning record keeping obligations. It's amended to increase the record keeping time from 3 years to 5 years to make conforming language changes so that it follows the model law. Section 18, page 24, line 17 concerns money laundering reports. Changing that for Bank Secrecy Act reports, and it basically takes that filing requirement away from the Attorney General's office and allows it just to be that federal requirement for the suspicious activity reporting and the record keeping. Section 23, page 25, line 31 adds a new subsection concerning department records that may be made public and concerning the confidentiality. Section 24 amends AS0655 to add a new section, Article 4 on page 26, line 14, concerning audited financials, implementation of the chapter, allowing the department discretion to enter into agreements with other state and federal agencies to improve efficiencies and reduce regulatory burden.
Tracy?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Do you mind going back to the Section 18 and explaining why we would remove the requirement that there's a report filed with our Attorney General and defer that to the federal reporting?
Yes. So currently, money transmitters are required to follow the Bank Secrecy Act and OFAC, which is that checking those sanctions list for money transmitters or for individuals or companies that may be banned from business with the United States. And so there are already federal requirements in place for suspicious activity reporting. Record keeping and the forms are filed with the federal government, the U.S. Department of Treasury through FinCEN, which is the criminal, and I'm not going to get the acronym, I apologize, FinCEN. So the Bank Secrecy Act is in place for banks, credit unions, money transmitters, anybody that deals with any kind of financial stuff. If an individual comes to you and there's some kind of suspicious activity, they investigate it, they're required to report it within so many days, and then that goes into a database for federal law enforcement, for state law enforcement. We're able to go in there and see that if there's a pattern of suspicious activities. And so all of that's being dealt with on the federal level. And so I think it's just duplicative for the Attorney General to have that in law currently. I'm not aware of other states where that suspicious activity is being reported to the Attorney General's office. It seems like it was a duplicative thing and a little bit of a burden because there could be a lot of suspicious activity that's being reported, and it would just be one more burden on the company. So it's already being done on the federal level.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, continuing on. Sections 25 through 30, page 29, line 9, talks about revising and renaming this permissible investments to prudential standards. This is following the model law to fit within the new article. It talks about maintenance of those permissible investments, consistency with the model law. We want to make sure that companies have enough security on hand to be able to cover something if they're required to. And there's certain specific requirements for certain kinds of investments. So it has to be a certain level, certain credit rating. Section 26, page 30, line 8, talks about a new subsection D under 0655501, establishing and terminating statutory trusts related to department obligations. It adds a new subsection E that allows the department to allow additional permissible investments and to participate with other state regulators to identify those permissible investments. Sections 27 through 28 start on page 30, line 25. Again, more information about permissible investments. I'll go ahead and skip that. Talking about ACH, automated clearinghouse, and some other specifics, letters of credit. Section 29, page 23, line 17, talks about a new subsection D. Again, more permissible investment, letters of credit. I'm going to go ahead and skip the other. 506 talks about net worth, significant expansion of the net worth requirements from existing law, which only requires applicants currently to maintain a net worth of $25,000. If you're sending billions of dollars in money transmission, I think a $25,000 net worth is probably a little low. So we're looking to create and look at that to make sure it's applicable to the risk that's being taken by those companies. And making sure that there's a tiered level of assets held. It requires applicants to demonstrate net worth at application and allows the department to exempt applicants or licensees from net worth requirements. For instance, if it was a startup company, they didn't have a balance sheet to report. We could exempt that until they got up and running. Just trying to skim through this for you. Let's see if there's anything specific that would be. Sections 35 through 37 start on page 38 through line 10. It amends AS 0655603 for consistency with the model law. We're taking money services and opting out services for transmission. So everything will now be transmission rather than money services. So that's, again, consistent with model law. Section 38, page 38. Line 31 amends AS 0655605 concerning civil penalties to allow the department to assess its costs and expenses for investigation and prosecution, including attorney's fees, as part of the civil penalty assessment allowed under this section. Section 39, page 39, line 6, amends 0655606 concerning civil penalties for consistency with the model law. Another big one is section 40. And 41, they start on page 39, line 21, amending subsections of AS 0655607. We're removing the citation to AS 0655201, which is repealed. It's pursuant to section 64. That section 0655201 contains the currency exchange license requirement. This license type is being eliminated in the bill in favor of one license type. So money transmission license, there would be one. It would cover all of the activities that fall under that. We currently have one currency exchanger that's licensed in Alaska, so getting rid of a separate license and including that under the definition of money transmission will just streamline that for staff and for industry. We are in section 43, page 40, line 9, for consistency with the model law, AS 0655802 extensively revises exclusions. We're previously renaming it exclusions to exemptions, and it would add six new exemption types. It allows the department to add additional exemptions if it's in the public interest, so we have that option through regulation, and if regulation is unnecessary for the purpose of the chapter. Some of the exemptions are added to allow the businesses that provide money transmission as an auxiliary service, they're not required to hold a license, such as insurance companies, title companies, or attorneys. Others identify employees, third-party service providers, agents of payees, and intermediaries as exempt in certain circumstances. I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead to, we talked a little bit about receding earlier, so I'll talk about Section 47, page 44, line 16. It repeals and reenacts AS 0655830 concerning receipts for consistency with the model law. Subsections A through C contain content and format requirements for transaction receipts and define receipt for purposes of the section. Their receipts are required to be in English and any other language that's principally used by that licensee or authorized delegate. So if they're in a community, a Hispanic community, then they would be required to provide those receipts in the appropriate language for their customers. Subsection D contains exceptions to the receipt requirement if necessary. Section 48 talks about timely transmission on page 45, line 18. The licensee would be required to respond to inquiries from the sender with reason for the failure to forward money, unless doing so would violate a state or federal law. I'm going to try and scoot through some of these for you. We talked a little about the payroll processing services. Section 50, page 46, line 27, amends AS 0655 to add a new section, AS 0655845, concerning required disclosures for payroll processing services. We don't currently exempt those payroll processors. It's just basically writing it out, spelling it out in the bill so that they understand that they're required to be licensed in the state of Alaska. Sections 53 through 60, start on page 47, line 19, amend definitions for consistency with the model law. In AS 0655990, these changes include the incorporation of the words in the state to ensure that AS 0655 protects Alaskan consumers. Revisions are made to align the language of AS 0655 with the model law, including the exception for loyalty reward cards, amends the definition of control to at least 10% of ownership, and amended the definition of stored value. Section 61, page 49, line 16, adds additional definitions introduced by the model law. Section 62 amends AS 0655995 on page 52, line 27, to refer to the model law as the Alaska Uniform Money Transmission Modernization Act instead of the Alaska Uniform Money Services Act. Section 63 on page 52, line 26, repeals a number of sections, including statutes that are existing, Article 2 concerning the currency exchange licenses being repealed. They're no longer necessary because that section is being taken away. Section 64 through 68 start on page 52, line 30, are transitional provisions amending the uncodified law to avoid interference with existing contracts, to allow a transition period for holders of current money service licenses, to add a transition period for payroll processors, and to allow the adoption of transitional regulations by the department, and to instruct the revisor of statutes to amend certain headings. Section 69 on page 54, line 5, provides for an immediate effective date of Section 67, which will allow the department to begin a regulation promulgation process, And the last section, Section 70, on page 54, line 6, provides for an effective date of January 1st, 2023. I'm happy to answer any questions that I might be able to take care of for you.
Thank you very much, Tracy. I really appreciate you walking us through this sectional. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens?
I was just saying this is as complex as someone's alcohol bill.
Senator Machicki, would you like to respond?
Not on the record, Madam Chair.
Okay. I will go ahead and open public testimony for Senate Bill 238. Is there anyone online or in the room who wishes to provide testimony? Okay. Seeing none, I will close public testimony on Senate Bill 238, and we'll take a brief at ease. Welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. I'd like to invite Thor Stacey, who's the State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business, to provide your comments on the legislation under invited testimony. Welcome, Thor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'll be very brief. My name is Thor Stacey. I'm the state director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Appreciate the invitation to testify today on Senate Bill 238. To be clear, we don't have a vetted position on the bill, either in support or opposition, but we do have an interest. Across the country, when I reached out to my counterparts within FIB, these efforts are going on across the country, and the efforts to regulate cryptocurrency is gaining traction for some of the most of the reasons that have been brought forward here today. The big picture problem as we see it is the call to understand where the money's going, where cryptocurrency is going, and the potential to use it for essentially for uses that are counter to national interest. The secondary problem that we see as being identified is that of consumer protection. So as of now, if a money transmitter loses your crypto, you don't have anyone to go to. So the consumer protection part is the secondary problem that we see identified. The lens that we look at the bill through is from the small business perspective. So there are small businesses in the state that are money transmitters, and then small businesses are also consumers, or they can be defrauded or a victim of lost crypto, right, through a money transmitter service. So we see the bill as coming forward at the request of large money transmitting interests. The small business community has not come forward either to us or to any regulatory agencies, to our knowledge, asking for cryptocurrency to be regulated. So from our perspective, we always get kind of a cautionary flag when larger interests are coming forward asking for regulatory burdens to be or regulatory packages to be put in place. The state numbers show a rapidly expanding sector. From 2019 to 2021, we went from 31 million to 2.3 billion of declared crypto transactions. On one hand, I think the state regulator ahead of me here identifies that as a caution. On the other hand, it's a growing sector. It's a growing portion of the economy. There's a lot of opportunity potentially. We would like to see if that opportunity exists, that small business wouldn't be left out, so that if this package moves forward, any of the some of the specific provisions don't shut the small business interests out. I promised I would be brief, so I'm going to identify a few sections of the bill that kind of flagged our interest from a small business perspective. The bill is more than an addition of cryptocurrencies to the money transmitter license. There's other reforms within the bill that affect all of the money transmitters, whether it's fiat currency or the cryptocurrencies. I'm referring to the sectional notes here. So section 7. The proposed changes to AS 0655205 provides an exemption for $5,000 or less. Once again, I guess some explanation of where the $5,000 threshold comes from and what happens to a smaller business if that threshold is exceeded. Under Section 7, again, the proposed changes to AS 0655208, it requires virtual currency business with control over virtual currency to maintain an amount equal of each type of virtual currency sufficient to satisfy aggregate entitlements, meaning that I think if you're transmitting 1 Bitcoin, you have to have 1 Bitcoin in reserve. I think that's how I read that. That's a pretty onerous restriction for a small business. There might be some rolling average or different approach to take. And especially since there are so many different types of cryptocurrencies, that kind of requirement might be a barrier for a smaller interest. I'm going to skip ahead to Section 30. I have some other provisions that we've identified, but Section 30, I think, probably captures some of our concerns about regulatory barriers to entry the best, and that is the increase from the $25,000 net worth to a larger level or to a tiered structure based on transactions. We know that there's small mom and pop shops that transmit money. There's various immigrant communities in the state. Some of those family-run businesses send money back to families in other countries. We know that there's transient employed persons on cruise ships, for instance, that send a portion of their wages or all of their wages back to their family overseas. Usually those communities are serviced by a small money transmitter business that they trust, usually speak the same language, if it's not English. And when we look at raising the net worth requirement above $25,000, I don't think we're saying that that's not justified, but we'd like to know if consumer protection and transparency of transactions is the goal, why are we raising a net worth requirement if we haven't identified a lower net worth segment of the money transmitter industry as causing a problem? And so some of those provisions that are contained within the bill, from our lens, once again, look like raising barriers to entry and potentially cutting some of the smaller business opportunity out in a rapidly growing sector. That being said, we don't oppose licensure per se, and we certainly have no interest in money transmitters, whether it's currency or fiat money, supporting interests counter to national interest. So there's just a lot of details. I think the bill's 50-some pages. Some of the stuff in the bill is more than just adding cryptocurrencies to the money transmitter license. So with that, I appreciate the invitation and the patience. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them while I'm here.
Thor, I actually do. So on the sectional, under Section 30, you'd mentioned the demonstrating the net worth requirements, but I see that it says that it allows the department to exempt applicants from those requirements.
Madam Chair, in the testimony just provided by the state, it gave specific instances for the exemption, title agencies, certain kinds of professional services that might hold money in escrow for a short amount of time. So I don't think that the exemptions that this section references would be for a small business or an entity like that that's in the money transmitter business. I think that they would be for some form of professional service that holds money briefly in escrow. So that's how I understood the exemption.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Senator Michicki?
I have a question. Thor, you mentioned that you were concerned that larger companies had brought this forward, but I see this was brought forward by our Division of Banking and Securities. What do you kind of base that on, that it was brought forward by larger companies or larger corporations?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, in my conversation with the state, it was my understanding that there's a National Trade Association, the Money Transmitter Trade Association, that has approached various states to have a similar regulatory package like this in place, and that the key proponents behind that effort are some of what we would consider to be the larger money transmitter companies. I'm not picking anyone out for a reason, but you would be the PayPals of the world, the Zelle type app, probably Venmo, some of the larger interests in the business. So from what was communicated directly to me was that the PayPal, not to pick on PayPal at all, forgive me, PayPal, the PayPal of the world, the larger market shares are the folks that are saying, hey, we need to have some regulation in this sphere with cryptocurrency.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Thor. I'd like to have Mr. Schmidt come back up to the table and just respond to the question about the exemptions allowed in Section 30 of the bill. And if you could also state your name again for the record, just so that those listening online know that it's you.
Hi, my name is Rob Schmidt. I'm the Director of the Division of Banking and Securities. In brief, nothing that
Thorpe mentioned before me was a great red flag, and we are certainly wanting to assist small business. And yes, while I, as the regulator, can look at the numbers and have alarm, I can also see how somebody would look at the same numbers and see opportunity. We are open to a conversation about what is appropriate, about what is the appropriate thresholds are in Alaska, and about the provenance of this bill. It was promulgated by the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, which is a group of people like the Division of Banking and Securities for the American jurisdictions. In doing so, however, they reached out to the money transmitters so that instead of picking a fight, when this bill was done and went to legislators, they would have already worked with the money transmitters. It is accurate to say that by virtue of their size and their ability to pay attention to these things, it was the larger money transmitters that were at the table or were part of the back and forth between the industry and the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. As regards any more further specifics, I would also say that Thor's comment about smaller money transmitters that specialize in particular communities within Alaska for whom English may not be their first language, absolutely correct. We do see that without a doubt. And for any other further specifics, I would defer to Ms. Reno for a further explanation.
Mr. Schmidt, so can the department exempt certain applicants from the net worth requirements, or are the examples that you gave earlier the only examples of an exemption?
For that one, I'm going to have to refer to it or use a lifeline. So, Ms. Reno, if you could expand.
Sure. For the record, this is Tracy Reno. I'm looking at the bill, and it's page 36, part of AS06, 55506 net worth. And if you go down to C, which is on page 36, line 7 and 8, the department may exempt any applicant or licensee in part or in whole from the requirements of this section.
Correct, and that's how I read it. And but my question is, Mr. Schmidt gave specific examples of who might be exempted, and then Mr. Stacy mentioned that small business really might not meet that threshold. So my question is can you exempt certain small businesses the way this bill is written?
Yes.
My understanding is yes.
Okay. Thank you. So we'll take a brief at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 238, work order number 32-GS2312/A from committee with the attached fiscal notes and committee recommendations.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Seeing none, the bill does move. Senator Machicki?
I just had a little quick statement, but I guess I can do that after we move the bill.
Okay. So the bill's been moved. And I want to mention that we did have Senate Bill 175 on the agenda today, but the committee ends at 3 o'clock. So we will move that bill to another date. And I thank the sponsor and the House companion sponsor for being here in case that bill came up. Are there any final comments from the committee? Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't, so we've kind of reviewed what's sort of in our purview, but I think it's largely a finance bill. Because of that, I'm comfortable to have it further scrubbed by the next committee of referral. It's far from going to the floor, but it's the reason my supporting it moving on at this time. So just thought I wanted to clarify for those that feel like we may have moved it without further scrubbing. I just feel like it fits better into another job description.
All right. Thank you for those comments. Senator Stevens?
I want to agree, Madam Chair. I think it's a very important bill. I even though I don't understand it all, I realize its importance. And
the short time we have left, I think we need to move forward with this and not hold on to it and move it on to finance, where really all of the issues, most of the issues that that need to be fully reviewed will be done in finance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so at 3 o'clock, we are adjourned.